Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is Lieutenant Scott Lawrence. Hi, Scott. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Rob. I'm very excited to be on.
I'm happy to have you here. You wrote me when the season five announcements came out. You wrote me and you said, I really want to talk season five. And I love talking to new MASH fans. So this is really cool. So before we get to the episode in question, I got to ask you the standard question, which is, how did you become a fan of the series?
From what I can remember, I went over to a friend's house back in, probably back in middle school. His dad had it on. I remember watching it. That's a pretty good show. My family was never really into it a ton. They both watched it, my mom and dad, but I kind of found it myself and just kind of became a passion for me. I remember back in the day when MASH was just on TV and they didn't have DVDs. I remember actually going on and figuring out it's going to be on from 10 to 11 on this channel and then 2 to 3 on this channel. And then make at some point I could watch almost 8 episodes a day. So I would just, I mean, that's what I did. I would almost binge it back in the day as much as you could binge. Before the DVDs. So
you were a trendsetter. You were binging before that was a thing.
I'd be like, it's going to be on FX from 10 to 12 and I could go over to here and I could catch it on Hallmark channel. And yeah, that was, I was ahead of the times, I guess, for my age. I'm 36. So again, now that all this stuff is streaming and I got the DVDs and I bought the first ones for season 1 through 11. Then I bought Martinis in Medicine and then I got it on Hulu. So, I got it all now.
I'm laughing because I did the same thing. I own it on like 4 different platforms at this point. It's kind of ridiculous. Yep. So yeah, they see us coming and going. By the way, I guess it's Disney. Yeah, it's Disney at this point. When are we going to get the Blu-ray box set? MASH box set is like the size of a small car. You know,
it's very large. I will agree with you that. I'm going to say. And then my hobby has become where I'm a big collector of MASH memorabilia. I have all the characters, all the box ones, the TriStar ones. I've got autographed scripts. I've got all kinds of stuff. My pride and joy is I was actually able to acquire David Ogden Stier's personal script from a person whose dad was actually one of the rangers that was on the Malibu State Creek Park, and they became friends with him and Bill Christopher. So I have the script for No Laughing Matter with his personal notes in it, an autograph like that. So it is my pride and joy. I've got quite a collection, but he was able to send me some actually behind the scenes. His dad's own Polaroids. You can actually see the fire that was occurring, some shots that would be from the side. So pretty amazing stuff. But yeah, it's been a show that's probably the last 20 something years. It's really meant a lot to me. So.
That's amazing. Yeah, I remember you sent me a picture of like your MASH collection all spread out there. That's an amazing artifact to have.
Yeah, I was very excited to get it. He was partnering with some stuff, so I kind of heard what the kind of passion I had for it, so he was able to let it go to me. So hopefully one day my son will enjoy this show, but I'll keep it forever, so.
I don't want to dig too deeply into this because it's your private property, but you did bring it up and I'm dying to find out. So like you said, there are like his notes. Was there anything in there that really shocked you or surprised you, or was it kind of a standard, what you would expect from an actor, little like underlining of a word or question mark, or was there anything really like, whoa, what does that mean? Or, well, look at that. He was wondering about this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of it was him highlighting his, particular parts, parenthesizing it or underlining. There were a couple little notes, he wrote, cross out a word and said, put his own spin on, nothing too major. But just kind of interesting to kind of see, even just looking at those scripts in general, kind of see the flow, how they're going to lay it out. But pretty standard fare overall.
That's amazing though. That would be, an amazing piece to have. That's really cool.
Yeah. I'm very, very excited. I'm gonna hopefully get it framed here soon. But yeah, I've got that. And then I've got a autographed Yellow Brick Road from Mike Farrell that I got, was able to get a long time ago too. So it's one of those things where that collection just keeps growing and growing, but luckily my wife puts up with it, but it's my own little collection. So
now you mentioned you have the TriStar figures. Do you have the Klinger and Drag figure as well?
I'm trying to get it. It's hard to sell, but it's a very expensive piece. I think I've looked on eBay. That's where I have to get most of my stuff. I mean, I search the antique shops around here, and I'm in Nebraska and the surrounding states, but it's almost impossible to find. That's the one piece I don't have, and I'm trying to get the Libby 4-piece glass set. I've got two of them. Yeah, I'm all about it. But the two of the cups, I think, average between $200 to $300 a piece.
No.
Yeah, I love the show, but I don't love it. $300 a cup.
No, that's
So, but no, I'm hoping to get that one piece one day. My son's even saw it one day. I was on eBay, looked at it. He goes, "Oh, we should get that one, Daddy." I go, "Well, buddy, that's about $200." at 6 years old, he doesn't quite get the concept of $200 quite yet. So,
son, you got to get a scholarship to college, and then maybe I can get it. I in anticipation of going to see Jamie Farr at the convention. Which happened just this past weekend. We're recording this.
Pictures. Those were amazing.
Thank you. I initially wanted to get, because I have my Hot Lips action figure signed by Loretta Swit, and I thought, well, okay, I'll get the Klinger one. And the Klinger one and his critiques is fine, but you really do kind of want the drag one because it's just such a strange artifact for them to make for so many reasons. And like you, I went on the eBay, and it was like the cheapest one was $299.99. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna find something else for them.
that was cool. It wasn't a laser disc, but what you had there that you had them all signed, that was cool.
A stereo disc, which was a format that died about a month after they launched it. if any of you, basically, they have with laser discs, it's like a CD, mm-hmm. It's like a big CD. You pull it out, and it looks like a giant CD, except it's the size of a record. Stereo discs are just one piece of plastic, and you shove it in, presumably the player, and it just plays it. And it comes with like a paper label. And so it's a little easier. It doesn't get as scratched because all the stuff is kind of internal that it plays. But the problem is the corners are like sharp and they're heavy as hell. I mean, it's like when I got one, I got a couple of them, and you're like, man, just carrying three of these is kind of onerous. Like, I can't imagine having like a collection of like 50 of these. Like, this was like so it's just like, what a dumb format for them to even try. But I love it because, as you said, it's nice and big, and so you can get a lot of signatures. And so I got perfect. Jamie and Loretta and Jeff all to sign it, and it was funny. Jeff like wrote a lot, and Loretta was like chiding him. She's like, geez, you took up so much space. That's amazing. That's an amazing collection. Again, I would love to see Scripps just because I feel like I know these shows so well that even like mm-hmm. a word out of place, I would immediately feel like I'd know, oh, that's not the word. Like to that level, I'd be like, wait, he didn't say that word. He said that word in the show. Look at that. In the script, it's that, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I would say the notes that he made were fairly minor, but there was a couple that, made sense. I'm assuming just trying to put his own take on the character. Charles is kind of my favorite character in MASH. I mean, everybody loves Hawkeye, but I've always just, when he came on in season 6, I mean, I love the first cast, obviously, before they made some transitions, but I always had a special place in my heart for him. Just love that kind of humor and that, I guess, that class he brought to that role there. Mm-hmm. So,
do you happen to remember what, I don't expect you to remember what episode, but do you happen to remember what, at least season, it was MASH was running when you saw it for the first time?
I want to say I saw some of the earlier stuff, season 1 through 3, kind of the more hijinks, funnier ones. I mean, that's, those were some great seasons. I mean, I would say in my personal opinion, I mean, Adam's Ribs to me, I know that's a favorite for everybody, but that is that is kind of the top of the mountain for me. Mm-hmm. But I love the older ones too. I mean, again, I think that's the thing. When I got into this show, I was 12, 13, and I'm 36. I have a family that, I mean, and like you've talked about, as I get older and know more, those later seasons have a special place because, you can tell BJ being away from home, and there's stuff that you didn't get that I get now so much more. So, that's why I said I like both casts, both, 4 and 5 are obviously fantastic, but I know that the back half sometimes it's not as popular to people for those last couple seasons, but I do enjoy them. So,
me too. I'm looking forward to getting to it. But you just mentioned season 5, and of course, that's what we're here to talk about. Is episode 14, "The Most Unforgettable Characters"? The original air date was January 4th, 1977, written by Ken Levine and David Isaacs. Hey, Ken Levine, he was on the show earlier this year. Now we got another script by him. And it's directed by Burt Metcalf. So, the plot. Radar has decided to take a correspondence course on how to be a writer, and his first efforts are with the Daily Report, where we hear him adding all sorts of purple prose to what is supposed to be a military report. Colonel Potter notices this and tells him that the Daily Report is not a place for, quote, expressing yourself creatively, unquote. Radar assures him that the course, just $50 plus a $5 student activity fee, is worthwhile, but Potter seems none too sure. Radar moves on to the second assignment in the course, relating an amusing anecdote. He turns to Hawkeye and BJ for a funny story, and Hawkeye tells one about learning how many bones are in the human hand, 28, from a very erudite squirrel. They turn to Frank for a story, but he's more sour than usual. After telling a terrible story about a childhood pal who lost control of his wheelchair and smashed into Frank's father's car, he blurts out that it's his birthday, but no one seems to care. Hawkeye and BJ later on decide to give Frank a present, fake a fight between each other, which they will figure will entertain Frank to no end. They squabble in the swamp, screaming and hitting each other with pillows. Frank is overjoyed, but there's a problem. Hawkeye is a little upset over some of BJ's supposedly fake criticisms, especially over BJ's observation that Hawkeye always has to get in the last word. This leads to a confrontation outside, where Hawkeye tries to prove BJ is wrong, but nevertheless can't stop getting in the last word, leading BJ to storm off in frustration. Meanwhile, Radar tries one more time to inject a bunch of big words into the duty log. Colonel Potter tears the paper out of Radar's typewriter, barking at him to knock it off. He tells him that he doesn't think much of Radar's writing because it's so inauthentic. Later on, Radar wanders into the swamp looking for some ideas for stories. Hawkeye and BJ begin to snipe at one another for Frank's benefit, but it's so well done that it makes Radar upset. He tells them that he finds their friendship inspiring, but seeing them fight makes his chest feel tight. Hawkeye and BJ reveal it's all an act, a birthday present for Frank. Frank admits that he loved it, and then is mad at Radar for ending the charade. Later, Radar gives up writing, instead taking up magic. He tries the old smashing the watch bit, but Frank takes over, destroying his own watch before Radar has had a chance to slip it into his pocket. Frank chases him out of the swamp, with Radar screaming, "It was just a rehearsal!" All right, Scott, of course, is that we're going to go through this scene by scene, but overall, what is your impression of this episode?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, you know, it's kind of a... I kind of put it as, you know, you can watch this episode. It doesn't really have to have the plot of the whole series, you know what I mean? It's kind of a fun, goes over you know, a couple fun aspects as far as I love the intro where he's getting the extra, you know, pizzazz, I guess, to the morning reports. And then it's a great Radar episode, but a great episode where, yeah, you know, they add in a lot of good measure with, you know, BJ and Hawkeye having their little fake fights. I love Alan Alda's, you know, telling of this story about the bones. But yeah, very good episode. You know, I think it's good that they gave Radar this opportunity to kind of pizzazz up a job that he probably had to do every day. That probably got a little boring, so I can see why he'd want to do it. So,
yeah, it's a really fun show. It is, like you said, it's sort of like a, I mean, I don't want to say it's a one and done. All the matches are pretty much for one and dones, but it's an episode that anybody could drop into, having only, you know, the most barest knowledge of the show, and kind of understand the dynamics pretty quickly. You know, Potter is the commander, and he's kind of, you know, a little more serious, and Radar is kind of a gosh lucky kid. Hawkeye and BJ are friends, and then Frank is a jerk. I mean, you know, you figure it all out, you know, pretty quickly. Before we even get to the episode, though, there is something I do have to mention about the DVDs. And that is something I can't imagine, well, that's ever going to come up again. But if you watch this show on the DVD, now, of course, anybody who has the DVDs, you know that every episode has its own custom menu. They didn't just do a generic, you know, play episode and then the show. They took a frame from every show and somehow incorporated the four choices into the frame. You know, it's like play episode, scene selection, languages, and I forget what the other one is. But for this episode, the frame is Potter looking over Radar's shoulder as he's typing the daily report. So the camera, of course, is to Radar's front. So we're looking at the paper from the back. And all of the instructions for the episode are on the paper, but they're backwards, as if they really would be on the paper, the way Radar is seeing them. And, you know, look, it's not the greatest innovation since the wheel or anything, but but having worked in web design many, many moons ago, I can tell you, like, that had to be really hard to get a, to get approved, because people are always like, oh, they're never going to understand it. You can't have it backwards. I love that they trusted the audience to get the kind of gag that it's like, oh, play episodes backward, because that's, it's as if Radar is looking at it on his daily report. I just thought somebody at 20th Century Fox that compiled these DVDs went a little extra. They did a little extra for that episode.
That's nice, though.
I always appreciate that. I think that's a great little detail. It's just like, oh, that's nice. Cool. I like that they, I like that they did that.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah. You don't see it, of course, on streaming, because then it's just a generic menu. But on the DVDs, you get it. Now, another kind of nice touch that I like, and presumably this is the work of Bert Metcalf as the director, is, you know, we see all this footage, by the way, there's some stock footage of the hospital. Some of the stuff is we've seen in numerous episodes.
Yeah, we noticed that at the beginning.
Yeah, there's the Jeep arriving. Like, that's, you see that.
It's almost like they're cutting from multiple episodes to make that first 30 seconds. Is, it looks like it's almost three different shots from three different episodes.
Totally. But I love that when, you know, it's this montage of them doing triage and then the doctors in surgery. And while we're still looking at the footage, we hear Colonel Potter cut in and he goes, Radar, what is this cow flub dubbery? And again, I just like, it's a nice little detail of like, oh, we're transitioning from the visuals a little late compared to the audio. I just think, I mean, they could have just cut it on Potter's line where we see him say it, but I like that we're kind of like, oh, we're hearing Radar do his report. Okay, well, he's kind of talking a little flowery, and then we get Colonel Potter. Again, I just think that's a nice touch.
Yeah, I agree. It almost starts off kind of like the, you know, Dear Dads, Dear All Those, where you kind of have that over talk, and then it goes right into the episode, which is nice. So
yeah, I think that's a great detail. So I love that Radar, you know, I love that when Radar's like, I'm just trying to interject a little bit of myself in the report here. And Colonel Potter immediately kind of sighs and sits on his desk like, okay, all right, what's the, like, okay, yeah, there's something here. And it's the Las Vegas Writers School, serving the creative community since 1950, which is great. I love the line where Potter says, how'd you stumble onto this? And Radar says, Superman, sir. And Potter says, he take the course? Yeah. It's just a great, I love that line. I just love that he's kind of like taking Superman sort of seriously, like he's a real person. And by the way, I have to say my nerd, you know, my MASH nerdery is probably only exceeded by my Bob Dylan nerdery, which is then only exceeded by my comic book nerdery. That comic book that Radar was showing Colonel Potter, that's not a Superman comic. You can't really tell what it is, but it's, that art style just does not look like a 1950s Superman comic. I'm going to call in my shot. Right now, but that is not a Superman comic. But as we know, MASH should not pay attention to such things. And so Radar mentions the course is $50. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money now.
I was thinking that. I mean, what is that in today's dollars? I mean, $50 for a course, that'd still be quite a bit. Yeah, today. But yeah, move that forward 50 years. That's going to be, or actually, I guess more like 70 years at this point.
A couple of hundred dollars at this point. That's a lot of money. For where does Radar even have that? And maybe he got it at a poker game or something.
Yeah.
Maybe when he beat Hawkeye in the previous episode, at the Hawk's Nightmare episode, maybe he made some money. But man, that's a very, very expensive course. So of course, you know, Radar is trying so hard, but you know, Potter's like, I love, he says, save it for your novel. I'll dedicate my first book after you. Better let me read it first, which is a great. I think
that's Potter's got some great lines in this one. You know, he doesn't have a lot, but the ones that he does, he makes them count. So
yeah, he's like the best commander in the world, because he's firm with Radar, but he's kind about it. You know, which is, again, it's the best possible, you know, commander that you want. So then we go to the swamp, and Hawkeye and BJ are playing medicine glove volleyball, and then they go to Burns for a ruling, and he's distracted because he's busy reading his magazine, and he's talking about Sweden's high suicide rate, and Hawkeye wins, and then Radar shows up and asks for an amusing anecdote, and of course BJ doesn't take him seriously with the whole I have one in my Foot Locker. What size do you wear?
Yeah, I made a note. All those quick one-liner jokes were just fast and furious there between Hawkeye and BJ, just throwing all those out there. They were very good, though.
Yeah, absolutely. So then we get to Hawkeye's story about taking a medical exam, and he's trying to know how many bones are in the human hand. And, of course, you know, he's telling the story to Radar, and I love that it takes Radar a good one Mississippi, two Mississippi to catch up to the story being ridiculous. Because Hawkeye starts talking about that he's talking to the squirrel, and the squirrel is pointing in his hand going, 24. And I love that it, you know, Radar keeps writing. And then it, you know, then he finally looks at BJ like, wait, what? And I also love Hawkeye's detail that I found the squirrel over by the psych department, which is like a completely unnecessary detail. But I love that he threw it in. It really kind of adds some verisimilitude to the story. You just picture
he's selling young Hawkeye. It hard. He's selling it hard for sure.
Young Hawkeye, you know, rummaging around the campus looking for this squirrel on a bench by the psych department. By the way, Hawkeye is still wrong. It is there is not 28 bones in the human hand. There are 27 bones in the human hand. So, you know, he was wrong no matter what. He was, you know, the squirrel was wrong and he was wrong and, you know, the whole thing. And then Hawkeye's just, I mean, Ritter's just like, okay, all right. And then, of course, Burns tells his story, which is, as you might expect, completely nightmarish.
Yes.
His fun story is about a kid in a wheelchair who got loose, fell down the stairwell and smashed into his father's car, and he laughs like it is hysterical, and you're just like, man, this guy is a sociopath. And by the way, I love Larry Linville's the way he burns when he does Timmy's sickly wave, and he kind of does this like it's offensive in its own way, but he's trying to add some color to this. It's kind of like the psych department line he's trying to kind of add it to. You're just like, man, what is wrong with this guy?
Yeah, the thing is, like, Larry, like, we've talked in many episodes, he's almost, because of the role, he's underappreciated and how good he is at it. I love the last thing. Well, don't worry, his parents had money, you know, when they ran in the car. but yeah, he's so good at playing that character up. You know, it's such a contrast to BJ and Hawkeye, but, you know, you love to hate him, but you can tell he's, you know, he's really putting his own spin to make these lines he may not want to have to do all the time, still as good as possible. So,
you like to think, well, maybe Burns wasn't so bad when he was a kid, you know, and he got older and he got worse. But then he tells stories about from his childhood, and you're like, no, he was awful then. And when he was a kid, he thought it was funny that a kid in a wheelchair hurt himself. So it's like, wow, Frank was just screwed up from the very beginning, you know? Like, it's a sad case all the way around. So, of course, he storms out because Hawkeye and BJ don't like the story. Radar tries to talk to them about the writer's course, and then we're in the mess tent, and Frank is complaining to Klinger, who is serving the food instead of Igor, and we're going to see Igor in a second, and he talks about that he can't get any tapioca pudding because it's his birthday. And he's, you know, he's mad at Klinger, and Klinger does his best to even say, happy birthday, Major. And Frank isn't having any of it. Then he sits down and you've got Hawkeye and BJ there with Igor. The only time I think in the entire run of the series that Hawkeye and BJ are sharing a table with Igor. I can't think of another example.
I can't think of either. I felt bad for Jeff that he couldn't get any lines in there. You know, just kind of sitting there in silence for most of it, other than the famous flies aspect. But yeah, that was the longest I've ever seen them on screen together where they're not across from each other getting served food. So
yep. He must have loved it. It would have been great to have that. I mean, again, I'm sure he always wished he had more to do, but he gets to do the punchline, which is great, where, you know, he's like, oh, with raisins. No, sir. Flies, which is that's so disgusting.
Yeah, that's a great line though. Yeah, it was one of the funnier ones. I'm glad they were able to throw that in there. So
yeah, I love that Frank reveals it's his birthday, and he's like, nobody cares, and BJ's like, no, I'll prove it to you. Guess what, everybody? It's Major Burns' birthday, and the entire tent full of people stop, pause, say nothing, and move on.
Yeah, you feel bad for Frank. Most, I think he's rubbed most people in that camp the wrong way, especially after this long being there.
I love that Hawkeye tries to paper it over with, they're delighted. Now, of course, when I was rewatching this episode for this review, I was like, wait, why did they flip Igor and Klinger? Like, why would they do it that way? Why not just do it the other way? But then, of course, I got to the scene where Radar is at the chow line with Klinger talking about the writing course. And, Klinger mentions that his sister-in-law or something met her husband that way. And no, he was a mailman. You know what? He took the course. Mm-hmm. No, he was a mailman. And of course, they wouldn't have done that long a scene with Radar and Igor. So you had to have Klinger there. So that's why they're switching positions. But it is sort of funny when you see Klinger serving food and then there's just Igor sitting there not doing anything.
Yeah, that's the thing. You're so used to him standing behind the they're serving that. Yeah, when he's sitting at a table, it almost seems a little strange at first, but it does make sense. I love that. I can't remember the exact words here. When he's, I'll take a smattering of potatoes and a
modicum of ham and a smattering of potatoes. Yeah.
Yes. I thought that was great.
I love Klinger's line. You've been out in the sun too long. It's great. So then Radar talks to Father Mulcahy, who of course is all too willing to help out. He talks about his sister who can dunk with a heavy crucifix. And I saw on the details that apparently slam dunk was not a phrase in the 1950s. That did not come into parlance until much later. So that's a little out of time. But you know, maybe Father Mulcahy was a trendsetter. You know what I mean? Maybe he was the Could first be. Guy. Yeah, you know. Yeah. So then we're in post-op, and Frank is talking to an unconscious soldier who's got a medal, and Frank starts to steal his medal. He literally starts to steal it, his Purple Heart. And this scene was always cut in syndication. I never saw it until I got the DVDs. And on the DVD and on the in the syndicated version, it cuts in with Hawkeye and BJ walking in and sort of saying, "Hey, we're here to relieve you." And Burns like says, "You know, don't touch his Purple Heart." And without the preceding buildup, that scene never made any sense to me. I was like, why would he even say that to those two? So now I understand there's this long scene where Burns wants a medal so badly that he's willing to steal one off of an unconscious soldier.
Yeah, and I guess that was the joys of getting the DVDs. I remember that too. Again, when I was trying to, you know, binge watch before binge watching was a thing and trying to watch this episode, I remember getting the DVDs for the first time and watching them thinking, man, this is like a whole new episode to me, or I don't even remember this portion, you know. So that was always exciting times. Being the show was so old, you knew they were going to make a new one, but if you could find all these couple 30-second clips they'd cut here and there, it was always fun to see that.
Absolutely, yeah. You were kind of getting, if you total it all up, you know, you're like, well, they probably cut maybe 2 minutes out of every episode times 251. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, I got 500 new minutes of Mash to watch.
Yeah, you know, exciting times.
Worth it for the box set. So of course, Hawkeye and BJ come up with a plan, which is they're going to fight each other. Initially, they're talking about like a fist fight. And you know, BJ says, oh, you know, who wouldn't believe I couldn't take you out with one punch? Better fight Radar, which is kind of a cruel shot at Radar. Yeah. As if Radar is somehow like physically inferior to them or something. I don't know. But so then we find, we see the doctors are starting the fight in the swamp, and they're throwing the pillows at each other, and Burns is initially upset, but of course he quickly starts enjoying it because he realizes what's going on, and he sides with, you know, he starts playing both ends against the middle, of course, and he's sitting there with BJ and, you know, letting BJ rant and even kind of trying to goad him a little into saying more stuff. And it's not a shock. Alan Alda, Mike Farrell, great actors. But there's some real, well, we'll get to it in a minute, the scene with them alone. But, like, there's some genuine tension between the two of them, even though, you know, it's fake. But after BJ leaves and then Frank talks to Hawkeye, and you could tell that Hawkeye is actually a little upset. And it's great. It's like, wow, this kind of spiraled out of control.
Yeah, I agree. You could see Hawkeye's character not taking to some of those things that Frank was telling him as well as you would imagine. Even though knowing it was fake, it was still getting under his skin for sure. So,
yeah, I mean, we know that, you know, not to like read too much into it, but of course that's what we're here to do, is, you know, Hawkeye is incredibly sensitive about loyalty and friendship, and he is still smarting over Trapper having left without even leaving a note. And so, that, you know, it probably it's a sore point for Hawkeye. Mm-hmm. It will be a sore point up until the final episode of the series. He still, when BJ leaves and doesn't leave a note, he can't get over it, which, again, I understand. I think I'm probably pretty similar to Hawkeye in that regard. But it's something that's it's always going to get under Hawkeye's skin. And so BJ, probably without even knowing it, has hit a sore spot when he wasn't even trying to.
Yeah, I don't think BJ, when he was saying these, was thinking they were going to have such an impact, obviously. Because in that later conversation they have by themselves, you can tell he wasn't prepared to hear Hawkeye kind of coming back at him and saying, "You said this about me?" Mm-hmm.
So then we're back from the act break. Radar is telling another story, and he's talking about the Klinger saw some soldiers come in with some Chinese prisoners, and he thought, well, that gets you points towards being discharged. So he's going to go off and try and find some prisoners, which is an incredibly dumb thing for Klinger to do, to risk himself like that. And very simultaneously brave and stupid. To even do that. And we see the result of that is that he comes back with his rifle torn, his dress attacked. I mean, it's a little bit of a kind of like a rape joke, because they're talking about that it's men. These men have not seen a woman, and they're you know. But it's also so incredibly silly that you kind of, okay. But that is kind of the subtext of the joke.
Yeah, I would agree. Luckily, I got to say, they do it in a somewhat silly manner. You know, it is funny to see him come back and see him all torn, his dress all torn to shreds. But the thing that, you know, Klinger didn't obviously put much thought into it, to run out there and try to capture people in the middle of a war just to try to get out of there. But, you know, he's obviously desperate at this point. So
that leads to another wonderful voiceover of Potter telling the story, and then, I mean, Radar telling the story, and then you've got, "Enough, boy, enough!" And he's genuinely mad. Like, he's really, really mad, and that leads to this conversation where he says, "Look, you know, look, I'm no authority, but, you know, I think be yourself," because he says, this doesn't sound like you. It sounds like you swallowed a dictionary. And I love the bit about Ethel Hemingway. I may say I'm wrong. She's great. Ethel Hemingway. And, you know, Radar kind of takes the advice to heed a little bit, but you know, writes it down as another rule, be yourself. And then we get to the conversation, which I mentioned earlier, between Hawkeye and BJ. And it takes BJ a full couple of seconds to pick up that Hawkeye is genuinely sore. And it's, like I said, it's got some, I love when BJ's like, "Are you kidding?" And it's got some real, heft to it, in that it's, you know, they were trying to fake fight, and now they're really fighting, because BJ knows Hawkeye a little better than maybe Hawkeye realizes, in the fact that he can say something that sticks under Hawkeye's craw. But then, of course, Hawkeye just triples down with the whole, "Don't say another word. You know, fine." Did it. Did what? It got in the last word. "Don't say anything. That doesn't count. Don't do anything. Okay." And I love that when Hawkeye just does it one too many times, and BJ just screams to the heavens, like, he's like, "You're impossible!" Like, he screams so mad. I love. Oh, no, he says, "It's no use." That's what he yells. "It's no use."
Yeah. I love that. Yeah, Hawkeye has to always get that last little word in there, even if it's just under his breath when he's not even near him. He has to always say it. But yeah, I thought that was a great, great exchange between the two. You know, again, not when they come up with the original idea, you don't ever expect it to go this way, and expect Hawkeye to take it in such a manner that he does. But it's a great little 1-2 between them. So
I love the way Mike Farrell, when he turns, like, he puts his hand up in, like, and puts his palm in, like, an L shape, like he's trying to use, like, his force powers to, like, push Hawkeye over. Like, stop it, stop doing it. Like, he keeps making the L shape every time he turns. He does, like, three times. He turns around. It's a great, you know, body language, courtesy of Mike Farrell, where he's just getting so irritated. And by the way, that scene was also cut in syndication. I never saw that till I got the DVDs as well.
Really? That's crazy. They would cut such a, I mean, that seemed like a pretty, I guess, critical scene, or a pretty important scene in the episode in its totality. So, yeah, that would, probably make it a little strange watching it through without that in there and then seeing it later down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, it seems like some episodes had more cut out of them than others. This one seems kind of on the heavy side. So then Radar runs into Major Houlihan, and she tells a story about Donald Penobscot beating up somebody. And then we realize that the man he beat up was a blind man with his seeing eye dog. So yeah, everything we're hearing about Donald Penobscot, not good.
Yeah, not the greatest. I was a little surprised that Margaret was in it so little in this episode.
Yeah, that's basically it for her. That's basically her whole scene. Yeah,
I watched it. I think three times last night to kind of get prep for it. And the first time I watched it, I hadn't watched it in probably a couple months, and was like, "Is she not in this episode?" And then I realized, "Oh, there she is." It was a pretty quick in and out for her, but it got a good joke in there and moved on. So
yeah, again, Penobscot, terrible. Just terrible.
Yes.
So then Klinger tries to get out of the army, this time by killing himself, by pouring gasoline on himself in the center of the camp, and finally talks him out of it. He says, "Look, come back to the office and see what we can do." He pats Klinger. I love Klinger's like ceremonial garb, by the way. That's a great outfit.
Yeah.
But I love that Potter pats him on the back, smells his hand, and then whispers something to Radar, and obviously we're like, what's that about? And then we go back into Potter's office. Klinger demands a Section 8, and Potter just, you know, obviously, as we know now, Potter is just stalling for Radar to get done what he just ordered him to do. And, you know, he says, "Will you settle for 2 weeks in Tokyo, freedom or fire?" And, you know, Potter's basically like, "Anything but a free ride." And then, of course, that, you know, Klinger turns out, "All right, I'm going to have to do this." And I love the when he's about to pour the gasoline, and Potter says, "Son, you'll regret this for the rest of your life." Which is great. Yeah, well, yeah, I guess so. That's really what it is.
Short amount, but I wrote a note too when he was in there talking to him about being, you know, after he goes into flames, make sure he puts them in a blue jar. You know, got to look stylish.
Best color, yeah.
Yeah, his best color, yeah.
I'm going home in a butt can, as he says.
Yeah.
Klinger then pours the gasoline. And, of course, in this case, it's actual gasoline because the other thing was full of water. It was all just a fake. And Klinger panics, runs into the lady showers, which, of course, the writers can never resist. That joke. Running into the shower means a nurse will come running out with a towel around it. I think they never passed up on that joke.
Yep, it was always the easy go-to for them. So a scream and then someone runs out the door. Yep. So
somebody hired just to do that. Like, just okay, we're gonna put you in like a little bikini and cover the towel, and then you're gonna run out. Later on at night, we're back in the swamp, and we see how awkward things are. Hawkeye and BJ are not talking. Frank is, I love the body language that Frank, when he's, you know, normally he'd be sitting in the other side of the tent. Now he's sitting right in between them, polishing his boots. So he's like, he's just totally in his element here. He's just such a sadist. I just love that now that they're not getting along, he's got to be in the middle of it. He can't help himself.
Yeah. He loves it. He loves the fight. So I'm sure he's beside himself at this point. So
yeah. So then they start fighting, and then Radar says, "My chest feels tight." And Hawkeye, you know, being a consummate doctor, consummate healer, is like, "What's wrong?" And, you know, Radar says, "Really, it's kind of a stress thing." And he says, you know, "Hey," and Radar gets into his whole sort of speech about, "You two guys are terrific, the way you work together and laugh together and stick together, and you always got each other's backs." And, you know, Frank says, "You're getting mushy." And Radar's like, "No, I'm not." You know, he says, "A lot of guys say they're in the army, they're friends, but these guys really are." And it's a sweet moment. It's great. And then, of course, that leads Hawkeye and BJ to admit that the whole thing was a gag. And I kind of love that Frank initially isn't mad, that he's actually delighted and he's actually sort of touched that they did this for him, where he's like, "I loved it." Like, he's really kind of happy in that one moment.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it was as good a present as they could give him. I think it obviously brought him great joy to see them have that, but yeah, it's always nice when you can see a happy Frank Burns for a little bit.
Man.
Notice he can be a nice person occasionally.
it leads to a great line where he's like, Radar says, "I'm just trying to improve myself." And Burns says, "Trying to improve yourself is a waste of time," which leads to BJ say, "Frank should know, he gave up long ago." This is great. Perfectly delivered. Just a rat-a-tat-tat energy again by Mike Farrell. Mm-hmm. I just love it. Hey, Frank should know. He gave up long ago. So Hawkeye and BJ have a drink to Radar, and Hawkeye promises BJ the last word. BJ gets the last word, except he doesn't, where Hawkeye says, "You're welcome." And like I said, and I like, again, BJ actually looks kind of annoyed. He looks like genuinely like, okay, all right. And then the main act ends with Radar talking, typing a letter back to his mother. And, you know, he's using his plain spoken language, except, again, I keep saying this, he can't help himself. He ends the letter with, "Simplistically yours, Walter." So he's just throwing in that little flourish there at the end.
You paid $50. You got to use some of those words. You know what I mean?
Seriously. Yeah. And then we have the button scene where Radar is now trying magic. And of course, again, Burns, feeling like he's, one step ahead of the game, grabs the watch that he gave to Radar for the sake of the trick and smashes it, not realizing that Radar did not have a chance to substitute it. And again, it features a great line where Frank sees the watch and now it's all just a pile of rubble. And he says, "I got this from one of my Whiplash patients." It's just, again, like, it's just such a crook.
Yeah.
Oh man. He's just,
that's worth $14.
Yeah. It was worth 14 bucks. Again, kind of a lot of money back then. Yeah. But just one of my Whiplash patients, like, oh, you know, Burns, so he's supposedly so patriotic and yet he's cheating people, cheating the system. You know, we found out in the other episode where he's got two books of taxes, one that he shows to the government. You know, I mean, he's just an utter crook, utter crook. And, you know, Larry Linville and the other characters, the enlisted characters, again, him and Jamie Farr and him and Gary Berghoff, they really did have a great, you know, Mutt and Jeff energy a little in that, you know, they just had a great, I love the way Radar grabs his stand and, you know, Burns chases him and you hear Radar say, "It was just a rehearsal." It's just, it's very Abbott Costello kind of thing. And as someone who loves that kind of style of humor, I always laugh at it because it's just like, yeah, Radar's in trouble, but not really because it's Burns. I mean, he's not going to get in trouble really.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and it's just a great fun way to end the show.
Yeah, I thought that was it was great. Just him crushing his watch and then coming to the realization that it was actually broken was great. And like I said, it seems like those characters have a lot of back and forth with Frank throughout the season. So they really do well together on the screen and bring some hilarity over those years. So
yeah, I mean, Burns gets a lot. Larry Linville gets a lot to do, and he gets some awful lines. I mean, again, the speech about the kid, the sickly kid, and the Whiplash patient and stealing the medal. I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff from Burns, but at the very least, it's not like him being racist or whatever. Like, it's like, it's kind of more standard issue corruption on Frank Burns' part.
Yep.
So, yeah, overall, it's a really funny show. It's lightweight. There's not really any much medicine going on, but it's nice to have episodes like this every so often, just sort of a character piece for everybody, and everybody gets a little something to do. So it's a really fun, funny show, a solid entry for season 5. So, Scott, now that we're wrapping up here, like, do you have a particular favorite line or joke from the show?
I mean, I've got to go with the "Who put the gasoline in my gas?" I know that's probably most people's, but every time I see it, even though I know it's coming, it's always hilarious just to see his face, his reaction immediately. Just a great line overall. I mean, I love that. I love, obviously, Alan Alda's bone story with the, you know, I just love how he sells it. But yeah, the gasoline in my gasoline is for sure my favorite line of the episode by far.
If you actually poured gasoline over your head, it would hurt. Eyes, that would be really painful.
That's what I was thinking. Like, he had a shocked face, but I feel like it'd be so into your skin. Yeah, his eyes would be covered. I mean, to get it off would be a major undertaking, to say the least. I don't know if the shower could even quite do it, but he sells that so well. Any episode where you can get Klinger, kind of going to one of his attempts to get out of the army are always classic. But this one was pretty dang good, I thought. So
yeah, it's the whole bit is great. In fact, my favorite joke is from that same scene, except it's when he's in Colonel Potter's office. And, you know, Potter's not taking it seriously, and Klinger warns that he's serious. And he says, have you ever seen a Lebanese go up in flames? It's not pretty. And first of all, I just laugh at that line, the way Jamie Farr delivers it, like his sort of cocksure delivery. Have you ever seen a Lebanese go up in flames? It's not pretty. But also, it took me, I'm ashamed to admit, it took me many years into adulthood, what I laughingly call my adulthood, to get the Dada-esque subtext of that joke. Because, of course, why would a Lebanese going up in flames somehow be worse than any other person going up in flames? Or why is it about a Lebanese person is somehow, that's, what are they more like kindling? I mean, it doesn't make, like, the joke doesn't make any sense. And the fact that the Klinger is acting like seeing someone go up in flames would be bad, but a Lebanese going up in flames would be way worse. And it's just, and it's like, oh, that's the, okay. I literally was in my 20s when it finally dawned on me that that was the joke. And it reminds me a lot, not to get too far off the beat here, but what it reminds me of is in the early days, the first 5 years of Saturday Night Live, there was a writer on that show from the National Lampoon named Michael O'Donohue, the legendary Michael O'Donohue. He's no longer with us. He wrote a more recent credit. He co-wrote the movie Scrooged with Bill Murray. And he was one of SNL's original writers, and he was kind of like the dark prince of the National Lampoon, and he really gave SNL in its early years kind of some notoriety because he was so renowned for his talent. But anyway, he would do this imitation, as he put it, of various people, and sometimes he would say like Mike Douglas or Kirk, or like, I forget who else he would say, Mike Douglas was the talk show host, but he would talk about other people that were famous at the time, but he would do an imitation of them if they had 6-inch steel needles shoved into their eyes. And he would say, it would go something like this. And then, of course, he would just writhe on the floor screaming in pain. And the joke of it was, anyone is going to look like that. There's no imitation to be had. And he would extend the joke to the point, one point that he had the entire Mormon Tabernacle Choir getting needles shoved in their eyes. And it took many people writhing on the floor. And it was that joke that took me forever to get that. Oh, I see. The joke is that there's no point in doing an imitation because everyone's going to react the same. And that's what they're doing here. That's Ken Levine and David Isaacs' joke, is that a Lebanese person burning themselves to death is somehow more horrific than an English person.
Yeah.
It took me so, I swear, I think I was like 26, where I was like, oh, and I just felt so dumb. But
yeah, and there's a lot of jokes still on here. Yeah, I mean, you know, even as I'm getting old, I mean, I'm still getting some for the first time. I mean, honestly, credit to you in this show. I mean, there's some that, well, with Office of the Day, where he had the OD on his, you know, I didn't know what that meant. I didn't think of the actress that could be, you know, when he references that, who that was. I mean,
Olivia de Havilland,
yeah. Yeah, there's just stuff like that. Like I said, you don't get it until you get older, or stuff that, yeah, I've truly just now kind of got, oh, I get that's much funnier than I thought. And there's a lot more of that, it seems like, as you got later in the seasons, as they got different writers and stuff like that, they added a little flares there that, yeah, definitely went over my head first time. But it's been almost a joy, even when you're watching them, you know, every episode 30, 40, 50 times or whatever it's been at this point, you're still getting laughs out of them, which is amazing. So
isn't that great? Isn't that great that it's still paying dividends, even though you've seen it this many times?
Yeah, it's kind of one of those shows that, you know, it's meant so much to me just because, I mean, you know, you're having a bad day, I watch MASH. If I'm having a great day, I watch MASH. It's just something that's what my collection has gotten. It's just, it's always brought me happiness throughout my life and just the joy that I get watching it. And then, you know, now finding these shows, finding MASHcast, I know you've been with MASH Matters, all those. I mean, as 36-year-old and, you know, in Omaha, Nebraska, where I'm at, there's not a lot of people in my age group that really know about this. So being able to, you know, have these conversations and, you know, hear about people's love for it has always been fantastic. So,
well, that's great. And, well, thank you so much for coming on and doing the show. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me. It really was fantastic. I found you on the first episode, and, you know, I never in my dreams thought I could actually be on it, but I truly appreciate it. It's it's been a mass dream to me, let's say that. So
well, that's a great compliment, considering you've had some access to some inside stuff on MASH, and it's really impressive. So I'm glad that, you know, we could help add to, you know, put a, like a brick in the MASH firmament that you're building for yourself out there. And yes, props to your wife for being cool with all your MASH bric-a-brac.
I appreciate her. Yes, I will let her know soon that I got the okay too there. So it's exciting stuff. I'll keep adding to that collection. So
absolutely, yeah. Oh yeah, you got to let me know if you get the Klinger drag action figure.
I will really certainly not let you know. Yeah, that's on my hit list, my wish list. You know, maybe one day pile up a little cash over the years, and I'll finally be able to afford one of those, or somebody will maybe put it lower than $300. We'll hope for that.
There you go. Yeah. Hope springs eternal. So why don't you tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
So you can find me just on Twitter. I'm at Chiefs MASH Forever. And I say mostly just tweeting about, I'm a big Kansas City Chiefs fan here, and then MASH. So those are the two things I'm usually talking about, but always feel free to reach out anything MASH related. I'm always game to talk about that. True passion of mine. So,
all right, very cool. Of course, you can find this show on Twitter at MASH477Cast. You can find all the back episodes of the show on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to MASHcast on any podcatcher of your choice. If you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FWPodcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So, a big salute to Daniel Ulrich, Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, Britt Schramm, Mike Thomas, Michael Porter, Joe Perino, Billy Shulman, and new supporters, Dennis Bailey and Kara Kay. Thank you so much for supporting MASHcast. I really appreciate it. So we will be back soon. But until then, that is all.
Maybe I should just go to assignment number 2. Let's see. Describe a beautiful scene outside your window. Maybe assignment number 3.